breaking those summoned swords, for example, and your vulnerability to distraction.
I admit your duplicity surprised me. You had spoken in a fashion consistent with honorable folk, so I did not anticipate the tactic. I applaud your adaptability.
Talion pointed the Sakess downward, thrusting it into the dirt as the wandering war had with his own blade moments before. The harvester paused. Releasing his grip on the Sakess, Talion raised his hands. You seem interested in an extended conflict. I am not interested in that under these circumstances. At the moment, I need to ensure that the people who killed those candidates are found, and then help the people I can. After that, I'll recover, and I can give you a much better and more extended fight. The wandering war's lip twisted into a sneer.
You're surrendering?
He raised his blade swiftly, holding it high with a single hand.
I will not allow it.
The runes on his blade had entirely faded by the time Talion pulled it from the ground. He had counted on that. As the wandering war surged forward in a blur of motion, Talion knew he only had time for a single strike. Runic blades flashed in the dawn fire's light. A decisive cut, and Talion fell among the graves. Chapter 22 Velis 7 Trust. Velis knelt next to Jonathan Sterling in a hollow in a hillside that barely deserved the word cave. The bodies of three other paladin candidates lay still behind her, nearer to a basin filled with water. The symbol of Lissari, the goddess of life, was etched into the stone above the basin. Landon waited outside, keeping vigil from a semi-concealed position behind a nearby tree, his bow at the ready. She judged that he was out of earshot for simple conversation, but easily within the range to hear shouting or the ringing of steel. She slipped her backpack off her shoulders, opening the top flap and removing the medical kit.
Keep those eyes open, Sterling. I'm going to need you to keep talking so I can brew the appropriate antidote.
The blonde man nodded wearily, his gaze distant. Opening the kit, she retrieved an empty vial, removing the cap and setting it aside.
How long ago did you drink from the basin?
He shrugged.
Hard to judge. Maybe 10 or 15 minutes. I think I might have blacked out briefly.
That's not good news if it's true. He should have mentioned it before. It significantly changes the plausibility of pursuing his attackers.
Okay, how much did you drink?
He gave a pained expression.
Just a couple hands full.
She nodded patiently.
Good. Good, that might be treatable, especially since you already threw up.
Velis reached into her bag, shuffling through components without retrieving anything sufficient.
Last question for now. What did it taste like?
It was sweet,
he began, closing his eyes.
Something like almonds, I think.
She nodded again, finding what she was looking for in the bag.
That gives me the context I needed. Thank you. Give me a moment.
Can you help me?
That I'm still not certain about.
Velis retrieved a pair of herbs and a smaller vial of liquid. She carefully mixed them into the vial and then retrieved her wineskin from her pack and filled the remainder of the vial with it. She handed him the vial.
Drink.
His eyes fluttered open, and he accepted the vial and drank it down, setting the empty vial at his side.
Will this save me?
Velis shook her head.
There's good news and bad news.
She took a breath.
The good news is pretty simple. You weren't poisoned before.
Velis pulled the surgical knife from her bag, pressing it against his throat.
The bad news is that you are now.
Sterling's eyes didn't widen in surprise. They just scanned down to the knife, and then shifted to meet her own gaze. And he gave her a charming smirk.
What gave me away? I had some suspicion about the setup immediately. The key was that they had left you alive. You didn't say anything about chasing the assassins away or injuring them. They had no reason to be sloppy.
The last question really confirmed it.
What are the chances your entire group would drink water that didn't taste like water without someone warning the others first?
He rolled his eyes.
I suspect I should have been better prepared for loaded questions. Fair enough. I'll give you credit for being more observant than the other two, even if you missed a few key things.
She quirked an eyebrow, tensing her knife hand, itching to cut.
Oh, such as?
Well, for one thing, the water isn't poisoned,
but the air is.
Oh, shit. She narrowed her eyes.
You could be bluffing.
Give it a few minutes. You'll feel it. Your friends that are exerting themselves are probably already suffering from it. Well, the one who came close, at least. The Dalaran is probably fine.
Okay, then. We're at a fairly simple impasse, then. But Thorn Guards always carry an antidote to their poisons, don't they? I can treat what I just gave you.
He grinned wider, flashing stark white teeth.
Thorn Guards do, or so I've heard.
You're not with a guild. They wouldn't take a contract like this. But you recognized my hand sign, and you left me a warning note. So, Thorn Guard.
Sterling lifted his left hand to his forehead, giving an expression of exasperation.
Velis pressed the knife closer, intended as a warning for his movement, but it failed to cut his skin. She frowned.
Another miscalculation on your part. I didn't leave you any letters, and I'm not with the Thorn Guard. I did, however, bring an antidote.
She heard the sound of steel scraping against stone behind her and spun around, stepping away from Sterling in alarm. Eridus was standing from the stone floor, a dejected look on his face. He had a blood-stained arrow in his hand.
Really, Velis,
he began.
Even a cursory glance would have shown you that the wound on my neck,
he gestured with the arrow,
wasn't just a bit of someone else's blood. But you didn't even check on me. I'm wounded.
You're going to be a lot more wounded in a second, you traitorous Thorngard fuck.
Eridus gave a deep laugh, tossing the arrow to the side with a casual gesture.
You know, you sounded like you were pretty on track at the start of this conversation, but you keep forgetting that there are other people who might know a few basic hand signs.
He raised two fingers to his forehead.
Shall I sing you a song of the story of Symphony's lover?
She reversed her grip on the knife, preparing for a throw. The short blade wasn't balanced for throwing, but at such close range, she suspected she might land it.
You're a Blackstone.
Sterling remained on the floor, stretching his arms.
And revelation dawns upon the wayward rogue.
He tilted his head toward her.
But there needn't be any hostilities between us if you are, as the signs say, a friend.
Those? She gestured toward the fallen paladins, thinking of her late-night talks with Celia Laurent and the drinking contest with Alden.
Were my friends. A shame.
Sterling brushed his hands on his knees, beginning to push himself to his feet.
I had hoped we could reach an understanding. You showed the beginnings of some cunning in a pedestrian sort of way.
Eridus leaned against a nearby wall.
The note was a professional courtesy. I'll say I'm impressed by how well you covered your tracks. I did some digging and couldn't find anything about your guild name.
Silk.
The Rethri whistled appreciatively.
No wonder you're blustering so hard. Under normal circumstances, even I wouldn't want to tangle with Symphony's apprentice.
He glanced at Sterling.
But since I'm on loan to Vakes Sterling, I think we can safely call this an exception.
Vakes Sterling.
Velis changed her mind about the knife, backing out of the entrance to the cave. Rather than hurling it immediately, she slipped the blade upward, making a tiny incision in her own palm. The former Queen's Guard couldn't afford to close her eyes, which made envisioning the poison in her body more challenging, but she was still able to locate the foreign essence with some effort and begin to channel it toward the bleeding wound on her palm. She knew that she couldn't afford to deal with any complications for the confrontation that was brewing. Sterling sprang to his feet, scratching his head.
Retreating, Velis! I see you finally grasp the situation you're in.
He cracked his neck, turning his head to spit on the cave's floor.
I'll give you credit. Poisoning me was a nice touch. I'm not even angry. It's not every day I get to play with one of Symphony's things.
He flashed another grin.
But I do so love breaking my sister's toys.
Velis snapped her fingers on her left hand, the somatic gesture for casting a simple spell. a familiar signal, the sound of a wind chime, one that she had used with Landon a dozen times before, the signal to open fire. Landon's arrow flew straight toward Eridus's throat, and Velis had just a moment to process her companion's sense of ironic humor before the Rethri snatched the arrow out of the air. She threw the knife at Sterling's head. It struck him in the center of the forehead, bounced off harmlessly, and landed on the cavern floor. There was no hint of the telltale flicker of a barrier, just the same resistance that Velis had felt when she had failed to cut his skin before. Sterling sighed.
"Didn't Symphony teach you anything about our kind? Your weapons and spells aren't going to have any effect on me."
Velis raised her left hand, her palm pointed at Eridus. "Push!" A violent burst of motion hammered the armored Blackstone, slamming him into the cavern wall.
"He's less invincible," Velis noted. "We'll work on you next."
Sterling sighed, glancing at his fallen companion and shaking his head, and then looking back up toward Velis.
"That was rather rude."
He drew the practice sword from his side, running his fingers along the edges. Rather than sharpening or bursting into flame, the blade began to shiver and quake, as if straining to escape its hilt. Velis cast a glance at where her quarterstaff stood near the pennant, too far away to reach, and drew her own sword. Sterling waved his left hand in the air and took a mock bow, then raised his blade into a traditional Velryan dueling stance. Velis mirrored the stance, having no intention of retaining it. This could be no ordinary duel. An arrow flew at Sterling, but he easily deflected it, shooting an angry glance at Landon.
"I'll be with you soon enough, Theus."
Theus? Why'd he call him that? Eric Taran, knowing his real name, made sense. Their families are close, but Sterling? The victim was Edric Theus's son.
The words of that playful rogue scribe echoed in her mind, as did her own reply.
"You'd be better off looking at your own people, I suspect." She tossed a brief glance back to Landon.
"Lan, you're the real target here. Fall back to regroup with Asphodel and Talion. I'll hold them here."
"Yeah, no, that's not going to happen." He knocked another arrow. "So you're going to have to plan to win."
Sterling drew within lunging distance, but Velis cautiously shifted backward, circling him. She couldn't take her eyes off her opponent at this point, so she simply shouted,
"Make sure Eridus stays down!"
Sterling moved. His shivering blade sent a numbing vibration down her arm as she parried, but she retained her grip and moved her offhand.
Push!
The same force slammed into Sterling that she had used on Eridus, but the Vakes merely pursed his lips as the essence washed over him, his hair blown askew.
"Disconcerting, but ultimately not dangerous to me," the Vakes reported.
"You'll have to do better."
Velis felt the burden of fatigue from her spells beginning to weigh on her shoulders and legs, but she was well enough rested that she judged she could manage a few more.
"For what little good they'll do me."
She ducked and took a swipe at Sterling's knees. He danced backward, shaking his head.
"What precisely was the point of that? You wouldn't have scratched me even if I wasn't invincible."
Velis backed away, continuing to circle.
"I just need a moment to think."
Sterling didn't give her that moment. He lunged for her neck, and as she batted that aside, he spun on his heels and slammed his left fist into the lower half of her breastplate. She felt the steel plates crumble like paper, jamming metal into her chest. Gasping for breath, she stumbled backward as Landon brought a pair of blades down on the back of Sterling's head.
He never was good at following orders.
The blades connected solidly, making Sterling flinch at the impact, but the Vakes spun around in a vicious lash that sent Landon skittering backward. At a glance, Sterling seemed to have suffered no lasting damage from the attack, but that wasn't what was on Velis's mind.
"Can't breathe."
The pain made her vision blacken for an instant. Dropping her sword, she fumbled for the straps on the side of her breastplate while Landon deftly hopped over a low slash from Sterling's blade. Velis couldn't concentrate sufficiently to unfasten the leather straps. The pain in her chest was too intense. The Queen's Guard had broken ribs before, but never with the distorted metal plate applying continuous pressure against them. Tear! The Dominion of Motion was ill-suited for the kind of precise damage she needed to inflict, but the leather strap wasn't particularly resilient. The spell separated the strap near her side from the breastplate, allowing her to wiggle the plate forward and draw in a ragged breath. Landon's blades were whirling, striking high and low in a furious pattern. Sterling parried some of the blows and ignored others, seemingly at random, but even those attacks that slipped through rebounded harmlessly regardless of where they landed. Even his face seemed as resilient as steel. Velis repeated the process with the other straps on the same side of her breastplate, slipping her head and arm out as soon as one side was loose and tossing the entire cuirass aside. She coughed deeply, doubling over, but it was a dry cough, not yet one tinged with her blood. She judged that her gambeson had absorbed enough of the blow to prevent her ribs from piercing into her lungs. Sterling batted one of the blades out of Landon's hands, giving her friend a crooked grin. Landon raised his remaining blade into a high stance, a suicidal stance. Velis jumped on Sterling's back. The Vakess froze, apparently startled, while Velis slipped her arms underneath his and attempted to pin them in a hold. Sterling jammed his head backward, but Velis expected the move, tilting her own head to the side and taking the blow on her chin. She felt her teeth clack together at the impact, but it barely dazed her. And with her arms now in position, she lifted. The pain in her chest intensified as she brought the Vakess off the ground. Landon took the opening, reversing his blade and slamming the pommel into Sterling's forehead with a loud crack. Sterling's neck recoiled, and he released his grip on his sword. Then Sterling shoved his elbow backward into Velis's ribs, landing the strike just above where he had hit before. Velis felt something within her chest snap, dropping Sterling and falling backward, landing hard on her back. Wheezing, she looked up to find Landon slamming his blade into Sterling ineffectively again, and then failing in attempt to sweep the Vakess off his feet. Shit! Velis braced herself on the ground, attempting to push herself to her feet, but the burning within her chest made her shiver and fall as soon as she began to move. Sterling pressed closer to Landon, deflecting blade strikes with his bare hands, until he finally grasped the sword and wrenched it from the duelist's hands. Landon punched Sterling in the face, but the Vakess only shook his head, patting his cheek.
"It would appear you have exhausted your options. I'll give you a moment for your prayers."
"That won't be necessary," came a nearby voice, a newcomer's voice. "Help is already here."
Velis turned her head to see Garrick Torrent holding a broken half of the beacon he had given her in his left hand. He held a gilded rapier in his right hand, pointed toward the dirt. And he was not alone. Lydia Hastings stood to his right side, her own rapier drawn, a flickering barrier materializing around her.
"You must be the assassin I've been looking for. I wasn't expecting you to be right here, but that does make things convenient. Shall we dance?"
"Oh," Sterling said, turning toward Torrent and Lydia. "By all means. Let us begin."
Chapter 23. Lydia, 6. Sterling.
"Well," Lydia thought, setting a hand on Garrick Torrent's shoulder. "I wasn't expecting to find my target out here quite so quickly, but I won't complain. Dominion of Protection, fold against his skin."
The barrier manifested around Lieutenant Torrent immediately, and he nodded to her appreciatively, breaking off to the left. She broke to the right, her own barrier already in place, instinctively understanding Torrent's intent for a flanking maneuver. An unarmed Landon of the Twin Blades rushed around their opponent to stand in front of Velis Jaldan, who was down on the ground, her breastplate cast aside. Her sword was nearby. They had only witnessed the last few moments of the combat. Landon's last few ineffective strikes, and the blonde man's relentless advance. But Lydia had already told Torrent that she suspected Landon was the next target for an assassin, and the scene laid out in front of them manifested in a fashion obvious enough for her to know which side to protect.
Sterling is a vacay-"
Landon managed to begin as the blonde whirled on him, moving forward in a blur and grabbing his neck. The man that Landon had identified as Sterling frowned, turning his head toward the approaching paladins as Landon raised his arms and ineffectively grabbed the hand that had grasped his throat.
"A vacay-" That explains why the sword wasn't phasing him. But why would a vacay-" be working against House Theus?
Lydia dismissed the question. There would be time to judge motives later.
"You can stop moving, paladins. I'll crush his throat if you take another step."
Torrent vanished, reappearing next to Landon, grabbed him, and they both vanished. Sterling was left strangling the empty air. Moving his hands in front of him, Sterling shook his head.
"A teleporter! That's going to be irritating."
Velis moved for a fallen sword on the ground, but Sterling kicked it, sending the weapon sliding across dirt and grass far out of reach. He glanced down at Velis, giving her a disapproving frown.
"Haven't you suffered enough?"
He kicked her in the side, flipping her over entirely while Lydia began to advance again.
"Torrent will be back soon, but how do we approach this?"
She caught sight of the fallen figures at the nearby cave entrance, gritting her teeth.
Oh, he's going to pay for this.
She dropped into the AR in instant striking stance, focusing her vision on the few exposed vulnerable points on Sterling's body.
If he really is as resilient as the vacay-" are supposed to be, and from Landon's last few swings that looked likely, I'm going to need to be precise and strike somewhere vulnerable. The eyes, most likely.
Sterling advanced on her, still unarmed, looking nonchalant.
"He's going to try to catch my blade like he did with Landon's. I might be a hair faster on the draw than Landon, but not by much. I need a distraction. Dominion of Protection, wrap around my blade."
A blue-white shroud encapsulated the sword, causing it to shimmer in the low light.
"Not sure what that was for," Sterling remarked. "But I'm pretty confident it's not going to help you."
Torrent reappeared directly behind Sterling. The vacay-" didn't seem to notice. Lydia stepped forward into a lunge. As she had predicted, Sterling reached for the blade, but she whipped it out of the way, slashing downward. She severed the bindings on his right boot, smirked and danced backward, resuming her stance. The vacay-" glanced down at his boot, sighed, and then looked back up at Lydia.
"Really? Do you have any idea what that cost?"
She shrugged.
"Probably not a fraction of what you're making on this contract, although I'll wager it isn't in coin."
He sighed.
"You don't have to try to bait me into talking. I think we're all relatively clear on who is killing who at this point, and I've never minded a bit of conversation before a meal."
Lydia quirked an eyebrow.
"A meal? Your sorcery, my friend. It's going to be delicious."
Sterling rushed forward, enhanced by a motion sorcery effect, Lydia judged, and Lydia flicked her blade outward to stop his rush. She had no time to aim for his eye, but nevertheless, Sterling turned aside to avoid her strike.
"Ah,"
Lydia smirked.
"Perfect. He doesn't know if the sword can hurt him. It probably can't, but I'll solve that problem later. Where's Talion? If he's one of the bodies down in that cave... Well, then at least the vacay-" could be nearby. We could use a weapon like that for dealing with the vacay-"
Lydia stepped back, resetting her stance. Torrent flickered and reappeared behind Sterling, thrusting a rapier at the vacay-" from behind, but Sterling spun and caught the blade. Lydia took the opening, slashing the back of Sterling's other boot. He had other positions that would have normally been more tempting, but if she connected with his skin and failed to bite, Sterling would know her blade was useless. Sterling snapped Torrent's sword in half. Garrick disappeared again. Sterling lazily cast the broken half of Garrick's blade aside, turning back to Lydia.
"You know, you're beginning to irritate me." "I should hope so, but in fairness, I should probably offer you the chance to surrender and face a trial."
Sterling ran a hand through his hair, looking contemplative, and then shrugged.
"Declined." "I expected as much, but you seem like a talker, so humor me. What's all this for?"
The vacay-" laughed, shaking his head.
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you.
I've always considered myself very tolerant of outside perspectives."
Sterling folded his arms across his chest, glancing briefly skyward.
Well,
he smiled,
we're saving the world.
Lydia took another step back, knowing each step her opponent had to take widened her advantage.
That's somewhat grand, even by Vakas standards.
Sterling tilted his head to the side.
Is that so? Are you acquainted with many Vakas?
He began to advance again, glancing from side to side. Lydia followed his glances, noting that Velis had dragged herself over to a tree and was valiantly attempting to pull herself to her feet, but that Landon and Torrent were out of sight.
Not directly, I confess, but I'm relatively confident one of my friends works closely with one.
That's scandalous. A paladin? Friends with a contact for the Vakas? What would your superiors say?
Lydia shrugged.
Not much, to be honest. I think they're fairly accustomed to spies from other organizations being omnipresent at this point.
What a sad state of affairs.
Sterling shook his head.
Your once proud knighthood slowly decaying from within.
He's stalling. I thought I was stalling, but he's stalling for something. Even the most arrogant assassin wouldn't want to talk this much, and I don't think my little protection trick on the sword is what's deterring him. I need to end this.
Lydia braced herself as Sterling stalked forward, and as he came within reach, she lunged again, aiming directly at his right eye. He intercepted the blade with an iron grasp, just as she had expected, and she stepped in close and tapped his arm.
Sleep!
The dream spell flooded over Sterling. His eyes closed.
I'd really rather not.
He jerked the rapier out of her hand, flipping it around into his grip. Lydia stepped back, but not fast enough. Sterling struck her with her own weapon, and sparks flew as the blade's barrier struck the one around her body, deflecting the sword and leaving both barriers undamaged. And with Sterling's hands occupied with a useless weapon, Lydia was free to raise her own and began an incantation.
Xeracillus, I bind my aura to this ring.
She felt a chill as her body heat briefly shifted, creating a flicker of flame over the ring she wore on her right hand. It was minuscule, a dying candle's flame on a winter night, but it was enough. The ring glowed white on her hand as she spoke again, turning her right palm towards Sterling.
Eru Volar Centaurus!
A sirocco of blue-white flame burst from her hand, sending shivers through her form. Sterling dropped her sword, thrusting out both hands and inhaling deeply. A black aura manifested around his hands, creating a vortex that tore her flames out of the air, leaving nothing but a trail of smoke. Lydia staggered backward, shivering uncontrollably and falling to her knees.
Gods, so cold. Hardigan warned me, but...
Sterling shook his head, kicking Lydia's fallen sword out of the way as he advanced.
Not a bad trick. That might have actually hurt me if it made contact. A shame you won't get another chance at it.
Sterling blurred forward again, reaching out, his hands flickering black as it tore through her barrier and grabbed her around the throat.
You have many skills. Enough to survive without a few of them, I'd think.
Lydia felt something reach through his hand. Foreign essence, probing within her, flooding her blood, and tearing something out of her. She screamed, in spite of the hand clenched around her throat. Lydia was only vaguely aware as she crumpled to the ground, feeling terribly empty within, worse than any loss of blood.
Stay down,
Sterling instructed, delivering a kick to her right leg. Bones shattered within, and Lydia's mind fluttered again. She curled into a ball, shivering, nearly insensate. Torrent appeared behind Sterling, grabbing directly onto the Vakas.
We're going on a little trip, Garrick murmured.
The pair vanished. Moments later, they reappeared only a blade length away. Sterling had Garrick in a single-armed headlock, and he was shaking his own head.
Against an ordinary opponent, I suppose teleporting them high into the air would be quite creative. Against the Vakas, well, you just gave me travel sorcery. Appreciate it.
He dragged Garrick across the ground, the lieutenant struggling within his grip. Lydia could not even consider intervening. Her mind was frozen, broken beyond the state of her body. Sterling smiled, reaching down.
A gift like that deserves something in return, don't you think?
I don't have much on hand.
His grip settled around Lydia's fallen rapier.
But on such short notice, this will have to do.
And he plunged the blade into Torrent's chest. Garrick fell free, released from Sterling's grip. The hilt of the sword struck the ground first, driving it further into Torrent's chest, leaving him coughing as he rolled helplessly on the dirt. Sterling stepped close to Torrent again.
What were you thinking? I mean, honestly, couldn't you have thought to go for help?
He laid a boot on Torrent's side, flipping him to face upward and plucked the rapier out of his chest. Garrick let out a rasping cough, raising a hand in what looked like a warding gesture, and then smiled, grabbing onto Sterling's leg.
How pointless.
Sterling thrust the rapier downward, only to find it snapped in half by a blade that glowed with blue-green fire.
As it turns out, Garrick rasped, I did go for help.
5 more glowing blades appeared around Sterling, swiping inward. Sterling deflected each of them with precise strikes, jumping backward and spinning around, scanning for his attacker.
War! What is this nonsense?
Landon stepped out from behind a nearby tree, hurling something, just a handful of dirt, Lydia realized belatedly, into Sterling's eyes. Sterling stumbled backward, dropping his sword and reaching for his eyes, and then vanished as the floating swords whisked through the air where he was standing moments before. The Vakes reappeared a dozen feet away, punching a tree hard enough to bury his fist within it.
War! You hear me, you fucker? I'm going to end you!
Snarling, Sterling vanished a second time, and for a moment, the forest was silent. A pair of figures moved into view, only one of which was familiar.
Talion.
His sword glowed brightly in his hand, bathed in the light of 7 runes. Lydia smiled softly at the sight, the mirror of a legendary god. The swordsman was limping forward, half carried by the other figure, an unfamiliar man with strange coppery skin and hair.
Lydia,
Talion muttered, noting her. His eyes shifted, catching Garrick on the ground next.
Oh, gods!
Lydia could not yet find the strength to speak. The pair moved forward with agonizing slowness until Talion pulled himself free, kneeling at Garrick's side.
I'll get you help. Hold still.
Garrick let out a choking cough, reaching out for Talion's hands. The swordsman took them.
It's too late for me, boy. But it's all right. I never wanted anything more than to be a hero.
Talion nodded.
I'll be here for the end, then.
Gods, don't embarrass me, lad.
From her vantage point on the dirt, Lydia couldn't quite see Torrent's face, but his voice was strained with tears.
Go see to Lydia and the others. Eritar will see to my needs. He always has. Goodbye, sir.
Lydia felt little of what followed, but when Talion lifted her into his arms, she knew that at last she was safe. Interlude 2. Asphodel, 1. Oracle. Asphodel chased the trail of her potential future. Having deviated from the main road, her boots crunched against leaves and branches on the forest floor. She ran at a steady rate, pacing the phantom vision of her own movements in her left eye. Each step brought her closer to a confrontation she had already heard. While her eyes only showed her varying future states of the location in her field of view, her ears provided her with sensory input that she would be exposed to at a later time, regardless of the location in which she gathered that sensory information. Thus she had known, just before Eric Taran had teleported them, that they would find the bodies of fallen comrades at their destination. She had known that they would confront deadly enemies, but she did not yet know if they would survive. Without pausing to concentrate for a coherent vision, she could only hear a few minutes into their potential future. It was insufficient to judge if her platoon had just sealed their own fates, but if they had, she believed it was necessary.
Deviating from the path of destiny, can only lead to madness and ruin.
Asphodel stumbled over a loose rock, just as the vision of her future had. She caught herself against a tree, her right foot landing inches from a snare. Nearby, she noted a piece of discarded armor, a single plate bracer, the leather straps cut away. She scanned the forest canopy, still unable to locate her quarry. She did, however, note multiple other pieces of glimmering steel scattered on the forest floor. When her own image moved deeper into the woods, she was swift to follow. The overlay in her left eye was only about 1.5 seconds ahead of her own time, providing little chance to react to it. The images overlapping her right eye were further in the future, 9.7 seconds. She had measured this carefully, learning to utilize it to predict enemy movements. A crossbow bolt entered the vision of her right eye, and her future self, further ahead on the path, raised a hand. Asphodel rushed ahead, displacing leaves and grass, and raised her right hand. She saw the projectile approaching a second time, mimicking her earlier vision, and she copied that in turn, snatching the bolt out of the air and snapping it between her fingers. More traditional sorcerers often recommended that she use sorcery to adjust the time frames shown in her vision, but her earlier experiments in doing so had proven unproductive. She had long ago acclimated to the specific timing of her sight, and adjusting the timing ruined her tactical advantage. Growling softly, she turned her head toward the origin point of the bolt. Susan Crimson, squatting high in the branches of a nearby tree, unarmored and frowning furiously. Asphodel saw herself slowly approaching the tree and followed her own path.
"You know, I was really hoping they'd send someone else," Susan called down to her. "Your little prediction trick is irritating."
Asphodel smiled, following her own image as it circled to the right, breaking Susan's line of sight. As she moved, she discarded the broken pieces of the crossbow bolt, noting a distinct patch of grass that had been directly in line with Susan's position. Most likely another trap of some kind.
"Candidate Crimson, I offer you the opportunity to surrender,"
Asphodel offered, recalling the words that she had heard herself speak, the words that had guided her to break from Talion's path to seek her own. She already knew the reply, and thus she drew her sword, deflecting another crossbow bolt with ease. She also knew that this action would trigger a silence in her mind, and as she struck the bolt, she realized why. The metallic blade shattered, a vial of black fluid attached to the bolt's shaft, splashing the Dalaran with droplets of liquid and fragments of broken glass. The glass shards impacted harmlessly, but the few beads of the fluid that touched her skin triggered an immediate effect. The images of her future selves vanished. Her eyes saw only the present. Her ears processed only that moment in time. Asphodel rushed behind a nearby tree, breathing heavily. Ducking, she raised a gauntleted hand in an effort to wipe the droplets away from her face, but the brush of metal against her skin did not avail her.
"Don't panic, don't panic."
"Ha! I knew that would work! You fucking sorcerers are all the same!"
The Dalaran heard a nearby thud that she judged to be Susan hopping down from her tree.
"Take away your little tricks, and you're worthless."
"That vial must have been void essence. She just cut off my connection with the Dominions."
Asphodel dropped her sword and slipped off her backpack, tearing open the top compartment and scrambling to retrieve her waterskin. Footsteps were rapidly approaching. The Dalaran tore open the waterskin, pouring it over her face and tossing it aside just as Susan rounded the tree, a loaded crossbow in hand.
"Not a bad tactic, but a little late."
Asphodel's vision was blurred from the water, but she still managed to throw herself to the side when Susan lifted her hand to fire. The bolt landed harmlessly in the nearby dirt. Susan made a tisking noise, continuing to approach. Asphodel blinked ineffectually, using her left hand to raise her tabard to wipe her face as she scrambled to her feet. As Asphodel turned toward her opponent, Susan slammed the empty crossbow into her temple. Her vision swam as she fell backward, blood seeping from a shallow cut, the crack of the wood echoing in her mind. She landed hard on a large stone, but her armor served to cushion the impact.
Fucking worthless.
Susan cast the crossbow aside, drawing the sword from her side.
"I mean, your hair is going to be worth a fortune, but your fighting skills, those are pretty unimpressive."
"My hair?"
she processed.
Of course.
As Susan's blade descended toward the Dalaran's neck, Asphodel focused on the crystalline strands that housed her essence, and drank deeply of their strength. The assassin's blade seemed to slow as each strand of power flooded Asphodel's body, filling her with years of stored power in each of her body's dominions. She caught the blade in a gauntleted hand and flexed her fingers, snapping it in twain. Growling lightly, the Dalaran shoved herself to her feet. Susan backpedaled, flicking her left wrist in Asphodel's direction. A dagger emerged from the assassin's sleeve, but its movement was sluggish with Asphodel's altered perception, and she stepped around it. Asphodel advanced, raising her arms into a simple, unarmed combat stance. She felt a shiver of euphoria as the essence continued to seep into her body, but maintained her approach, knowing that every instant she utilized this inner strength was borrowing from the span of her life. Susan swept her broken blade at Asphodel's eyes. Asphodel raised a bracer and deflected the strike, stepping inward and slamming an open palm into the assassin's chest. She felt ribs buckle at the strength of the blow, sending Susan falling backward into a nearby tree, coughing blood.
Fuck!
The assassin muttered, breaking into a coughing fit. Asphodel retrieved her own discarded sword, while Susan grabbed another bolt from the quiver on her hip, gritting her teeth. The Dalaran approached deliberately, swiping her sword across the crossbow bolt and shattering the attached vial across the assassin's body. The liquid shimmered blue in the faint light scattered between the trees.
Surrender! Now!
Susan dropped the fragment of her remaining bolt, grinning manically, and raised her hands.
Suppose I must?
Asphodel kept her blade near Susan's throat, kneeling down and grabbing the remaining bolts in the quiver at her side and casting them into the forest.
Any other weapons?
Susan rolled her eyes.
Well, yeah, but getting rid of them all is going to take a while.
You may begin.
Susan sighed, shaking her right sleeve and displacing a knife, which clattered to the forest floor. Asphodel picked up the dagger and tossed it aside. Her crystalline hair was beginning to feel warm against her skin, implying a dangerous level of overuse, but she dared not break the flow of essence. She had no doubt that Susan would still be a threat, and her normal connection with the Dominions had not yet returned.
Going to have to take off my boots, and my pants, and my shirt.
Asphodel glowered at the assassin.
We'll start with the boots.
Actually, before that, there's something you should know.
Susan grinned again, shifting her hands behind her head and leaning back against the nearby tree. Asphodel bristled, sensing danger in Susan's tone.
Talk.
That last vial you broke? Not void essence.
If the Dalaran had not been using her essence, she could not have hoped to react quickly enough to the blade that was arcing toward her neck from behind. Her spin brought her blade in a perfect half-circle, deflecting Sterling's attempt at decapitation and bringing a sour expression to his face. Asphodel frowned. She had not heard the swordsman approach, and she had last seen him half-dead on the floor of the cavern.
Another traitor, apparently.
She raised her blade into a high stance. Her hair continued to warm, burning the flesh in her scalp and ruining her concentration.
I need to end this engagement quickly.
She asked no questions. She simply stepped forward and brought her blade toward Sterling in a heavy diagonal cut, speed and strength fueled by her flagging essence. The cut was too fast for an ordinary swordsman to avoid, but Sterling made no effort to block or dodge. He simply vanished.
Teleportation.
She spun again, finding Sterling next to Susan, his hand on her forehead.
Susan, dearest, you really need to not warn our enemies that they're being flanked.
He sighed, running fingers into her hair, and then grabbing a tuft of them in a painful-looking grip. He glanced up at Asphodel, showing no sign of concern as she raised her blade for another strike.
No time for you right now, I'm afraid. We're on a schedule. But I'll commend your reaction, and hope to see you again.
He tipped his head downward, smirking, and vanished again, taking Susan with him. Asphodel slammed her blade into the tree where they had been moments before, not wanting to risk the possibility that they had merely gone invisible. The strike cleaved deep into the bark, but met no resistance.
Failure.
Asphodel scanned the nearby trees, finding no sign of enemies or allies. Shivering, she dropped her blade and reached up to her forehead, feeling the burning of her hair against her skin. Only now was the pain beginning to overwhelm the pleasure from the essence flow, and she focused on that pain as she slowed and then ceased the tide of essence pumping into her body. Her vision blurred, and she found herself falling, barely catching herself against the tree where she had embedded her blade. She slowly allowed herself to sink to the forest floor, her breath coming in ragged gasps. For a time, she could not force herself to move. The sounds of future conversations came to her first, a ragged whisper at first, difficult to discern, but its return brought tears to her bloodshot eyes. She was still nearly immobile when Landon appeared in the distance, deftly avoiding Susan's traps on the forest floor, blades held in either hand.
"Over here,"
she called weakly, the fragment of a smile breaking across her face.
"I'm over here."
The swordsman danced around the final patch of grass that Asphodel had suspected to hide a pit.
"Any hostiles nearby?"
"No."
He arrived at her side and knelt down.
"Been looking all over for you."
"Why?"
The swordsman quirked an eyebrow.
"Because we've been worried about you. Things got rough back at the cave. Looks like they got rough here, too."
"Worried about me?"
Landon offered her a hand.
"Can you stand?"
She grasped his arm, clinging to it more tightly than she needed to.
"I think so."
With strong arms, he lifted her to her feet.
"Good. Because we're about the only ones left who can."
"We need to leave the bodies here for now. We'll return with a larger force."
Velis was the one speaking. She would deliver these orders a few minutes in the future. At the moment, Asphodel knelt at the side of her deceased commanding officer, wrapping the wound that had already ended his life. She knew it was largely a pointless measure, but she hoped that it might slow the deterioration of his body. It was a pitiful hope, one with no substance, but it was the only thing she could do to mitigate the failure in her mind. Nearby, Talion had stripped off his armor and was tending to an unconscious Major Hastings. Asphodel had only met the sorceress during her initial application process, but she had sensed a kinship in another entity tied to dominions that emphasized the gathering of information. Talion looked pale and exhausted, but his injuries were not the most severe. Velis leaned heavily upon her quarterstaff nearby, her armor similarly abandoned and her lower chest bound with bandages. Her breathing was ragged, but her expression spoke of grim determination. Only the strangest among them, the copper-skinned man with a bloody rent across his forehead, appeared unaffected by the carnage. He silently watched their prisoner, Eridus, who had been stripped and bound with climbing rope. When she had arrived, Landon gave her a simple explanation for the stranger's presence.
"That's the Wandering War without his outfit. Talion said something about freeing him from Sterling's control."
Talion had smiled and said,
"I broke his chains."
He had seemed pleased by this, and Asphodel had thus felt pleased for him. A small victory, at least, among their tragedies. There was little talk amongst the survivors until Velis spoke her orders. After that, it was simply a matter of delegating labor. Not trusting the Wandering War with their wounded, Landon insisted on carrying Lydia in spite of his own exhaustion. Asphodel assisted Talion with walking, while Velis leaned heavily on her quarterstaff. This left the Wandering War to continue to watch Eridus as they marched him toward the Paladin camp. But though many suspicious eyes fell upon the pair, neither made any attempt to flee or assault the group again. It was long past nightfall when they arrived at the base camp and the relative safety of a paladin escort. From there, the wounded were left behind, and Asphodel began the long journey back to Velthrin, accompanied only by prisoners and strangers. Chapter 24 Jonan 6 Questionable Pursuits. Jonan sat by the side of an old friend's bed. Talion was at his right side, the swordsman's left leg wrapped in bandages, his expression grim. Hours passed before Lydia opened her eyes, and Jonan was intent on getting the first word in.
"You're lucky, Lydia. You're the last of the three of us to wake injured in a bed."
She shivered, much as she had when she was asleep, her eyes closing again. For a moment he worried, but then they reopened, free from sleep.
"Where?"
"You're at a medical facility near the Citadel," Talion cut in, leaning forward. "Aladir has been here periodically, but he's had several others to treat as well." Lydia nodded, closing her eyes again.
What happened? I don't..."
She turned her gaze toward Jonan, her eyes narrowing.
"You? What are you doing here?"
Jonan quirked an eyebrow.
"Visiting you?"
Talion reached forward and took one of Lydia's hands. "It's okay, Lydia. He wasn't there. I don't think he was involved."
"Involved? Why would she..." "Oh, the Vakas thing."
Jonan stood up from his chair, his left arm still throbbing, and turned away.
"Well, I don't want to make things awkward. I just wanted to make sure you were safe."
"Wait," Lydia's voice. Jonan turned back around.
"Stay. Help me understand."
He sat back down, nodding solemnly.
"Where do we need to begin?"
The wounded paladin smiled.
"I don't think I'm missing that much. I just... it hurt so much."
"The Vakas escaped." Talion tensed his jaw. "So did Susan Crimson, who we believe was working with him."
"Susan Crimson? I don't know that name, but it seems familiar somehow."
"And the others? Garrick, is he..."
"Dead. I'm sorry, Lydia. He's with Eritar now."
"Such a worthless platitude, but if it helps her, I suppose I'll tolerate the lines, even if I won't repeat them."
Lydia sighed, closing her eyes.
"He saved me. Appeared right behind Sterling. I remember that much."
Talion nodded.
"He died a hero's death. But I fear he was not our only loss."
Lydia's expression looked pained.
"Who?"
"Two paladin candidates. Members of Sterling's squad. Celia Laurent and Alden Stone."
"For what little it's worth," Jonan offered, "I am sorry for your losses as well." Lydia nodded weakly, giving a sad smile as she looked toward him.
"Thank you, Jonan. And I'm sorry about before. I just... my last memories were..."
"No, I understand. And you are right to have a degree of suspicion. But Vakas rarely acts on his or her own. I can provide you with no proof, but I have never had any association with this Sterling that Talion spoke of."
"I understand. There are many Vakas. It would be absurd for you to know them all, just because you work with the priesthood."
Talion released Lydia's hand, moving his hand back to his own lap.
"As for the others, Velis is in the worst shape of us, but she'll survive. Landon made it through relatively unscathed, aside from his pride. I'm in much the same shape."
Lydia attempted to push herself into a seated position, but Jonan leaned forward and pressed down on her arm.
"Don't try to move yet. You're not going anywhere for a while."
She frowned at that.
"What do you..."
"Oh." Her gaze caught on the thick iron rod attached to her right leg, anchoring the bandages that held the recovering limb in place. She shuddered.
"It could be some time before you can walk again, and you may never regain your full use of the leg, but Aladir thinks they can save it, at least."
"I'm sorry, Lydia."
Jonan tapped his left arm.
"Just think of it as a fashion statement. Your leg bandages will match the ones on my arm."
"More like the ones on my own leg."
Talion patted his left leg, wincing at the contact. Jonan rolled his eyes. Lydia swept her gaze between the two of them.
"You two are going to have to get me out of here soon, even if you have to carry me. First, because I'll go insane if I'm stuck here too long, and second, because Taurean Dianus's trial is in 2 days.
Jonan and Talion exchanged a look. Talion spoke first this time.
"Lydia, you've been out for more than 3 days. The trial has already started, and it's not going well."
Lydia folded her arms.
"Then what the resh are you two doing here with me?"
Jonan shook his head.
"It's a closed hearing.
members of the city council and the priesthood of Xeracillus only, given that the accused is a member of the council. We've asked to be called upon, but...
Rushing politics, Talion mumbled. That's absurd. We're witnesses in varying capacities. You especially, Jonan.
The scribe nodded at that.
Yeah,
a witness that works for the same organization as the other people we just arrested in connection with the same crime. That's going to come across as very credible.
I will insist upon it. Get me one of those Xeracillus priests. I'll talk to them.
Lydia looked resolute, even as she continued to shiver in the bed. Talion patted the side of the bed. I think you're going to want to eat first. She frowned, her face looking suddenly childlike.
Well, I am very hungry.
Days passed as the trial of Taurean Dianus continued. With Ulander Tetherial still missing from the city, Aladir was able to use his influence to participate in the hearings, but the news he bore gave Jonan little comfort.
They're still asking for more evidence? The scribe folded his arms, leaning back against one of the citadel's walls.
He was joined by an unlikely group. Talion sat next to a blonde woman that he was near certain was Silk, and Landon of the Twin Blades was passing a bottle of wine back and forth with his apparent cousin, Nakane Theus. Lydia was seated nearby as well, in a wheeled chair that the others used to help her move about while she recovered. Aladir tightened his jaw, nodding slowly before speaking.
Aridus confessed to being the one who killed Calcirus, and that's undermined our case against Taurean. Given that Aridus was also a water sorcerer, he was capable of creating the toxin that was used on the crossbow bolt that hit you.
But that doesn't explain why Taurean altered the toxin while it was in my body!
Jonan sighed.
Unfortunately, that could easily be interpreted as a failed attempt to cure the poison. If, and even then, it couldn't be proven that he did anything to you at all. We would only have the testimony of the other sorcerers who checked your wound, two of whom are his daughters, making them both unreliable for different reasons.
Jonan tensed his hands in the air.
Is Voriana,
or Riala, I suppose, now that she's no longer hiding, making a case against her father?
I haven't seen her since Taurean was arrested. I'd imagine she doesn't want anything to do with this affair. If she speaks against her father, she makes herself another potential suspect if that fails to bear out.
I'll talk to her.
Jonan lifted his good arm and scratched the back of his head. Aladir put a hand over his eyes.
I'm sorry. I wish I could do more, but I don't know.
Nakane spoke, setting her bottle down on the table in front of her.
We will find everyone responsible for this, and we will make them pay, court or no court.
Landon shook his head.
That's dangerous talk, Kane.
She tilted her head as she looked back at him.
You disagree? You going to throw me in prison to stop me?
The twin-bladed swordsman sighed.
I didn't say that. Look, I'm going to help you, but we need to do this through legal means.
She folded her arms.
We'd best do it quickly. My father is on his way back to the city, and if he returns to find my mother's killer free, my own deviations from the law will be the least of our concerns.
Landon nodded solemnly.
We'll get them. Got one already. At least. And now Calcirus can rest peacefully.
Peace?
Nakane gave a choking laugh.
You clearly haven't seen the spirit playing, cousin. There is no peace in death.
Talion stood up. While I hate to interrupt you two, I think I have an idea. The blonde leaned heavily against the table.
Oh, look out, folks. Talion has an idea. Better get ourselves armed.
Yep, that's definitely Silk.
Talion scowled. Thanks for contributing, Vel. You're a real help. Pulling your weight, like I hear you did with the Vaykess. She stood up, shoving him backward.
Oh, I'd like to hear you say that again.
Landon chuckled.
God, you two. Keep the foreplay where it belongs, like the barracks or Lydia's office.
Okay, there's going to be no foreplay. Not here. Definitely not in my office. Never in my office.
Lydia folded her arms.
Talion, do you have an actual plan?
The swordsman turned his gaze toward her.
Sure. It's simple enough. We just have to catch Vaykess Sterling.
Jonan gave Talion a withering glance.
Yes, let's all rally our forces and march upon the... Where exactly is he? Oh, right, we don't know, and we don't have forces. No forces at all.
Lydia groaned and rubbed at her left temple, a gesture that